Welcome to our podcast. This is Friends on Fire.
I'm Mike. I'm a lifelong devotee of financial independence. I even wrote a book about it.
And I'm Maggie, a newer convert, but just as passionate, especially on the intersection of minimalism and financial independence. We're one and the
same. We are two like-minded friends who believe that talking about money with your friends and family opens the door to financial well-being.
The Friends on Fire podcast is about dispelling myths, building financial acumen, and sharing your financial independence journey with the people you care about.
This is Friends on Fire.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, Maggie.
How's it going?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm good. This is the first time recording from my new Friends on Fire office. It was really just my new office. I had to move upstairs because we're switching bedrooms, and like all my kids used to sleep in one room, or I'd give up my office, which was very large for them. Now I'm in their old bedroom. I'm kind of excited for my new space, but I'm not fully done. I haven't moved my felt panels. I haven't, I don't have carpet. So I was curious if it's going to affect the acoustics in any way.
I don't think our podcast is of a quality where this would matter.
Okay, and that's fair. And you're down in the basement on like a concrete floor. It's not like you've got a lot of acoustic friendly.
So far, no complaints from our listeners.
You're right. Okay. Well, then I'll just celebrate that I'm in my new office. And you know what you can do with a home office?
Are you going to say deduct it?
You can deduct it on your taxes, which is just my like sort of relevant segue into today's topic.
Okay.
What are we talking about today?
We are talking about the new IRS limits that were announced on select retirement savings plans. Super exciting stuff.
Super exciting. You know, I love talking about the IRS. And on that note, I got a little surprise for you, okay?
Okay.
Before we get into the nitty-gritty of the IRS limits and all the really, really exciting knowledge that you're going to drop on us and that I'm going to make mildly helpful comments about, I got some fun IRS facts for you. Are you ready for this?
Yes.
It's going to be like a mix of IRS trivia / facts, okay?
Okay. Is it a quiz or is it facts?
Well, I have the facts. I own the facts.
Okay.
They're my facts. And I'm going to release some of them as facts, and then some of them I'm going to turn into questions for you.
Okay.
Some of them will make good questions, so we'll sort of mix it up. Okay. Do you know which president signed into law what created the IRS?
The president or the law? What was the question?
Which president? I want to know, do you know which a president signed a law into place that is related to what actually created the IRS? Do you know which president that was?
Roosevelt.
You gotta guess. No. I think I'm not sure how far off you are. You're off. In July 1st of, do you know what year?
No.
You don't if you said Roosevelt. So 1862, President Lincoln, good old Honest Abe, signed into law a revenue-raising measure to help pay for the Civil War. And that measure created a Commissioner of Internal Revenue and the nation's first income tax. That is actually what became the IRS. So when you ask like when the IRS was founded, it was essentially founded July 1st, 1862.
I wasn't too far off. I was thinking Teddy Roosevelt, and he was born in 1858.
Okay, that's fair. You just didn't name what... Well, he wasn't even... What do you mean he was... That you weren't too far off? He was born...
Yeah, and you said 1886, right?
No, 1862.
Oh.
He was born 4 years. He was 4 years old.
All right, so he was a little baby. Sure, he's probably too early to start the IRS.
And look, we don't really know which Roosevelt you meant. I should have had you clarify. You made that sound a little bit closer by saying Teddy. All right, anyways.
All right, give me another one.
Ben Franklin's famous quote, do you know what it is?
A penny saved is a penny earned?
That might be one of his also. In this world, nothing can said to be certain except death and taxes.
Oh, yeah.
So that was a... Okay. Now, remember, we're mixing the quiz stuff here. Which has more words, the Bible or the U.S. tax code?
The U.S. tax code.
Yes. You got any guesses on how many?
How many words?
Yeah, how many words it is.
Oh, I don't know. I think it's probably 5 times the length of the Bible, though, if not 50 times.
It's about 4 million words long. Okay. And I'm not really sure actually how many words are in the Bible. I just know it's longer than the Bible. But that is the equivalent of about 58 novels, mm-hmm. like the average novel, which is pretty crazy.
Yeah. Wow.
And then guess how many forms are available, like IRS different forms are available on their website?
1,000.
1,977.
Wow.
That stat might be like a few years old, but, you know, about a couple thousand.
Yeah. With inflation, it could be 3,000 by now.
Could be. I don't know if form numbers you want to know a really fascinating thing I learned also?
Okay.
All of these are fascinating. Okay. If you were simply going by tax documents, in 1987, 7 million U.S. children disappeared. Like, in 1986, there were 7 million more children claimed on taxes. All of a sudden, in 1987, there's 7 million less. That was the year that the IRS started requiring that parents list their children's Social Security number on their taxes. Took me a minute to process that, right? So that means prior to that, tons of people were essentially fibbing, lying, whatever you want to call it, cheating on their taxes.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty crazy.
Yeah, I believe it.
Speaking of cheating on your taxes, okay. one more. I'm not sure that this is a fun stat. 90% of people who employ housekeepers and babysitters cheat on their taxes. And I don't know if this is currently still true, but at some point, I read somewhere that if you report someone, you actually get 30% of the amount collected. I don't really even want to know if that's true. I don't even want to be put in that position. That's a crazy. That sounded a little unbelievable to me. And I didn't have time to go in and like double click on that research. But that is like on the internet somewhere. Like that is written in an article. Yeah. It's not on the IRS. I mean, I didn't like go like read on the IRS's website or anything like that. It seems like that just seems like a little unbelievable. You just have people like.
It's probably that 90% of people just cheat on their taxes. And then they also like the same group also has housekeepers, you know, like it's a correlation, not causation.
Yeah, could be. Okay. That's all my fun facts for you on the IRS.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
I'm done now.
Now, we're not going to be talking about the IRS and taxes per se. We're going to be talking about the savings plans that the IRS regulates, like 401k, 403b, Roth IRAs, etc. And every year, the IRS comes out with their new contribution limits. And so this is a good opportunity to talk about it and plan for 2023. Now, Maggie, you will be surprised to know that I didn't learn about the IRS limits on 401k contributions until I was like 30.
That is shocking.
I know. We've talked about like financial regrets before. And this is like a small one that I didn't really remember at the time. But I had like my first 4 years in corporate America, I was, you know, contributing the 6%, which got me the full match. But I didn't realize that there were like IRS limits that I could contribute up to. So I missed those years.
Have you ever like had a intervention or like a sit down with your dad and been like, well, I thought you were a good parent. I thought like you taught me all these things. And then I find out this massive like family, like it's like a family secret he never shared with you, you know?
If I did that, he'd turn around and be like, you didn't know this?
Yeah, I know. He's probably like, I told you 50 times
Told me multiple times. But, yeah, that's funny. You know, I bring this up because I think this is a very common misconception or confusion, I should say, that like what the limit of the match is for plans through work is the limit you can contribute, and that's not the case.
Well, I have a confession. Okay. That I think I've perhaps shared on this podcast 27 times, but it's worth noting here because it's relevant to the topic. I did not know about the max until I was, how old was I when I met you? 37?
Yeah.
30, something in my late 30s. And I didn't, not only did I not know about it, but the related value of knowing about it is the tax benefit. So at a time when I was actually at a very high income and didn't know, you know, what I could do to reduce my taxable income. It was like the number one thing I could do to grow my net worth and my, you know, future, just my future assets, but also to reduce my taxable income.
Now, the reduction of taxable income, Maggie, as you mentioned, is like the biggest part of this. And it is a federally allowed way to avoid paying taxes. Now, this is different than tax evasion, which is illegal. Tax avoidance is just taking advantage of the plans that are made available to you. And so I think the first thing to talk about is just a refresher on like what is tax-free versus tax-deferred. A tax-free program is one where you don't pay any income taxes when you make a withdrawal. Now, there is a distinction, though, between like a fully tax-free program, like a health savings account, which we'll talk about later, and a future tax-free Roth account, so something where you pay taxes now, but then it becomes tax-free later. Now, the other side of this is tax-deferred, and this is what most people are going to be familiar with and take advantage of. Tax-deferred means that you reduce your taxable income now, and then when you withdraw it later in life, that's when you pay income taxes. So if you were to contribute $10,000 and your effective tax rate is 25%, that $10,000 would save you $2,500 in income taxes. Now, when you withdraw it again in retirement, that's when you pay taxes.
Mike, I was going to remind people that we've done two episodes that get into some of these things in more detail. Like, we're going to go right to the limits and kind of talk about them. But if you're not as familiar with what a 401k is, what a Roth 401k is, what an IRA is, what a health savings account is, et cetera, we've done prior episodes on Roth IRAs. That was episode 114. We've done multiple episodes on 401ks from why they're so valuable. We get into a lot more detail than we're going to get in today, why it's so valuable to max them out. We've also done one about what to invest your 401k in. So what your 401k invested in is episode 142. Like you said, Mike, we've done one on the awesome tax benefits of FSAs, HSAs, and DCAs. That is episode 59. So we have a ton of episodes and we'll put links in the show notes. But for those who feel like we're kind of running past what all these account types are, it's because we have already done episodes on them. So I'd encourage you guys to go back and listen to those first if you're feeling at all sort of lost in us jumping into some other details. Speaking of jumping to some other details, you should jump into the limits, Mike.
All right. So in October, the IRS made their annual announcement about limits. Now, these don't always change. But historically, every few years, they're going to go up. And these are pretty big increases. So from the IRS announcement, the contribution limit for employees who participate in 401k, 403b, most 457 plans, and the federal government's thrift savings plan is increased to $22,500, up from $20,500. So that's a $2,000 increase. That's sizable when you consider how much in tax you would be paying, and then you add that up over the course of your career. Now, like a lot of plans, if you are over 50, you can contribute an additional $7,500. This is up from $6,500. So if you are over 50, you can make these quote-unquote catch-up contributions, and you can contribute $30,000 to your retirement savings plans.
Yeah, and just to give a simple example on math on that, just on the 401k increase as an example, depending on what tax bracket you're in, I'm just going to use a higher tax bracket as an example.
For dramatic effect.
Yeah, for dramatic effect. That could save you, you know, $600 to $700 on taxes a year. So that $2,000 increase, you know, again, depending on your financial situation, it could sound small or a lot, but it's a meaningful amount in tax savings. And all those amounts, you know, that $600 to $700 in tax savings, you can invest that money. There's, you know, the compound growth, compound interest growth of the benefit of doing that, plus the fact that you've got all that extra money in your 401k, which is then earning tax-free interest over the, you know, X number of years until your retirement.
Yeah. Now, the next category is going to be for IRAs and Roth IRAs. Now, the limit for these contributions is increased to $6,500, up from $6,000. And then the over 50 catch-up contribution is $1,000. This one remains unchanged. Now, this is going to get super complicated. And so if you are like interested in this, a quick Google search will help clear this all up. But it's very hard to talk about income limits and contribution limits on a podcast format because it involves like tables of numbers. But one key takeaway from this is that you can do both an IRA and a Roth IRA, but the combined contribution can't exceed the IRS limit. You can also have an IRA or Roth IRA with a 401k, but your ability to deduct the taxes on your IRA may be limited based on your income. And again, if you are interested in this, you have to Google it and look at the tables. There's really no easy way to explain it over podcast.
And a lot of companies now, Mike, also offer a Roth 401k mm-hmm. as a choice.
Yeah. Right?
And then same thing, that there's that annual limit, but it's the total across both types of 401k. So for the 22.5, it's you might put some in both types of accounts if for some reason you're taking that approach. But either way, that's the total limit is $22,500 in 2023.
Yeah. And there's a lot of interesting strategies about choosing between a 401k or a Roth 401k or an IRA versus a Roth IRA. But the simplest way to think about it is you always want to save money where you are paying the highest taxes and then pay the taxes when they're going to be the lowest. So if you're a high earner now and you think you're going to be withdrawing less in the future, you want to save the taxes now and then vice versa.
So as an example, I, for some amount of time, knew I wanted to retire early and I was a high earner. And it still feels weird to say was. So it made sense for me to do a 401k and versus a Roth 401k because I knew I was going to be making less in the future. But the one thing I will remind people, for anyone who's overwhelmed by it, and we say this in all of our previous episodes on this topic, if you're to the point where you're trying to decide if it's more efficient or optimized to put money into a Roth versus a regular IRA or 401k, because you're trying to max it out and optimize things, you can't, it's hard to predict the future. You can do your best. But either way, you just the fact that you're considering maxing out either of those account types is a really positive financial step for you. And so there's times when I'd say, like, don't overthink some of this stuff. Like, you're doing good just by the fact that you're maxing these types of accounts out.
Now, the next and last category we'll cover before we get into some more advice is health savings accounts. And those limits are up $200 to $3,850 per person. So for a family plan coverage, you can do two people $7,750. And then for individuals 55 and over, you can contribute an extra $1,000.
This is my next year is my first year that I'm not going to be on a high deductible plan, most likely, and moving away from having the eligibility for an HSA.
So you've picked out a low deductible plan?
Well, I haven't picked out my final plan. We're in the enrollment period now, and it's a long period.
The courtship?
But yeah, we're in our courtship now. It's kind of like not as nice of courtship makes it sound way more enjoyable than it is. But there's significant benefit to Greg and I being on the same plan, which I was once told was not the case, but I've now learned is the case. And Greg cannot be on a high deductible plan. It doesn't financially make sense. And so as a result, then I will also move to one, which I'm not super bummed about for what it's worth, because there was a lot of tax benefits to me having an HSA that I won't get next year. It just isn't as like big of a benefit. The amount I'm paying, you know, like I pay hundreds of dollars every time I go to the doctor. And like, I'm kind of looking forward to being on like a reasonably priced plan and having like a normal copay again, especially when I just don't, like, I don't have the same income I used to have. So I care more about a surprise of having to pay, you know, hundreds of dollars to go to the doctor.
All right. So let's pivot and talk about what this all means and what you should do. And we'll try to simplify this as much as possible. Back to your point, Maggie. Doing anything, saving any amount into any of these accounts is beneficial. If you want to get like really granular and max out the opportunities, that's when getting into the details can pay off. But contribute something to all of these accounts and you will be on the right track.
Agreed.
All right. So what should you do? If you really want to crush your savings goals in 23, start by maxing out your employee plan, likely a 401k, that's what we came from, and that's $22,500 a person. Now, you probably need to do a little bit of math to determine what percentage of your salary that is. Most of these plans will say, what percentage do you want to contribute? You will need to back into that math. It is not complicated, though. I'm sure everybody can do it. Regardless of if your employer match is 2% or 4% or 6%, contribute whatever percent gets you that max.
Mike, the other thing worth noting is I think most people know this if they're eligible for one versus the other, but we always say 401k because that's what we're used to working for for-profit companies. But if you're a teacher, if you work for the government, it's a different type of account that's called a 403b typically. Same limits, same kind of general spirit of what we're talking about here. So I just wanted to clarify that for people.
Yeah, thank you.
So the next thing is that if you are eligible for a Roth IRA, you want to max that out. But note that your income might disqualify you. So the max for a Roth IRA is $6,500 per person in 2023. And just, again, we're not going to get into like all the income limits, but just as an example on a Roth IRA, the income limit is around $138,000 for a single taxpayer. And then if you're married filing jointly, it's $218,000. But there's a whole table and there's a lot of other.
And this is your adjusted gross income. It gets super complicated.
Yeah, you have to look at it. But I will say, I mean, it gets complicated, but it takes 5 minutes to Google some of this stuff and see exactly where you fall.
Yeah, that's right.
And so it's hard for us to cover it. Like
it's
said,
complicated for us to tell you with words how it works.
Yes, and to tell because there's 12 scenarios. So we're not going to walk through all of them. We would lose you more than we might have already lost you going through the
I think
IRS.
We lost everybody with our IRS fast facts.
We might have lost people with the... That's where I thought we pulled people in.
Oh, really?
Right? I just think that was like people came for the IRS fun facts.
Mm-hmm.
They stayed for the limit discussion because they were like, well, I'm invested now.
Right.
Okay, what's next?
All right. So if you can't do a Roth, do a traditional IRA, but note that you might also not be able to deduct it. If you have an employee plan, your income may prohibit you or have a reduced contribution. This is also $6,500. And again, you need to go look at the tables to see where your income falls.
Hey, Mike, what is your view on, this is a kind of a two-part question. What's your view on IRAs if you can't deduct it? Like, would you still do one? And do you do one personally?
You know, maxing out your savings is always a great plan. Even if you can't deduct it, you could do what's called a backdoor Roth and convert it into a Roth IRA. I don't do them because I've had deferred compensation plans at all my jobs. I have always deferred enough where the eligibility is not a question. I've always been eligible for Roth IRAs, and so I just make those contributions. So I am ineligible for making a regular IRA contribution.
Oh, that's an interesting point. Well, I will say out of almost just a blind discipline to like do all the things I think I'm supposed to do financially,
mm-hmm.
have participated in an IRA for a number of years before I actually even met you, before I maxed out my 401k, which actually wasn't smart, by the way, right? Like I was I'm over the income limit for getting any sort of a tax deduction for that IRA, but I did it because I just knew like, oh, people like you're supposed to put money in an IRA, right? And I just, again, bad move, would have been better off to take that $6,000 and put it into maxing out my 401k, which is actually deductible for my taxes. So I'd say like, that's an example of just being like fully educated on something. Like I just was like, oh, I thought people are supposed to put in money into an IRA and I should do that. I could afford to, so I should. More my own personal story, but I would just say on that one, and even on the 401k max, like I'm a big, like when we're talking to people in their 20s, I'm a big believer in maxing out your 401k, maybe even in your 30s. It depends how much you already have in it. I recently saw a post that it was someone else's, but as usual, Liz Gets Loaded shared it. And it was an alternative point of view in the personal finance space, which was maybe not everyone should max out their 401k. And their point was legitimate of like, you might actually have way too much money in your 401k. And I did get to a point where I actually am like over-invested in my 401k. I need more money in the next, how old am I? I need more money in the next 25 years than I do when I'm 65, 23 years. Does that make sense?
The point of the article or your story?
No, my point that I actually could be, some people could be overinvested in their 401k and might not want to max that out.
Yes. Here is my counter argument.
Go for it. Counter the counter.
if you have a 401k, like you're still working and you have so much money in it that it is more than you'll need in retirement, it means that you have worked too long and you should take this opportunity to go do something else. You shouldn't stop contributing. You should retire.
Yeah, that's a good point. Which that's exactly what I did. So great example. But yeah, just be conscious of that. Because again, the reason we push so heavily to max out your 401k is because, again, I have no stats to back this up, but I'm arguing 90% plus of the world does not have too much money in their 401k, probably 99% of the world. And so most people would highly benefit from the compound interest growth and the tax benefits of maxing out their 401k.
Yeah.
Well, we can move on now.
Okay. Last point that we'll make is that if you are eligible for a health savings account, so you have a high deductible insurance plan, max that out, $3,850 per person. Now, Maggie, you love HSAs. Can you give us the rundown on why they're so beneficial?
Oh my God, we did a whole episode on this. I'm going to have to even remind myself. I mean, the first benefit is the same thing as why 401ks are so beneficial. It's lowers your taxable income. So the amount that 3,800 plus, what's the limit? You just said it. It's not in front of me now.
Per person. 3,850 per person.
$3,850 per person. That limit reduces your taxable income. So that's almost $4,000 less than you're paying taxes on, which again, back to my example of the $600 or $700 is twice that. That's, you know, $1,400 potentially in tax savings, depending on what bracket you're in at that point. And so there's massive tax savings. Then it grows tax-free and you're not taxed on it when you take the money out.
As long as you use it for qualified medical expenses.
As long as you use it for qualified medical expenses. But it can be qualified medical expenses for you, for one of your dependents. So, I mean, there's a lot of flexibility. And the coolest thing that you can do for it, which I'm doing as an example, is I always thought I was saving that HSA money for the future, of like a future unexpected medical expense. That's great. I can plan to use it for that. It's kind of an emergency fund for future medical expenses. But if those future medical expenses never arise and I just need that money for like college or something else, I've been saving all my old receipts. And that's all you have to do is the document, the explanation of benefits, receipts, et cetera. And so let's say I've saved $20,000 of receipts, which probably isn't that far off. Anytime I want, I can cash that in. So it doesn't have to be like current. It's not like it has to be medical expenses from the last year. It could be any medical expenses from my lifetime. As long as I've got the receipts and the documentation, I can cash in. So if I have $20,000 sitting in HSA, which again, that money's invested, so it's going to grow over time in the market, tax-free, I can get that money out based on all these historical medical expenses, which is pretty cool. There's just a lot of flexibility to get to your HSA money, much more flexibility than there is on some other types of tax-preferred accounts like we're talking about.
So this all might seem like a lot of money and might seem out of reach. And perhaps based on your income, it is out of reach now. But the sooner you can max these out, the easier it's going to become to maintain it. $22,500 for your primary 401k, 403b, $6,500 for an IRA, $3,850 for an HSA. That's a lot of money. Multiply that times two if you have a partner, then you might think like that's impossible. But the sooner you do this, the easier it's going to become, because your lifestyle inflation will be based on this lower level of income. So if you're in your 20s and you're already maxing all this stuff out, what you think you are earning or what you are taking home is really a lower number. Like your baseline for your lifestyle inflation starts at a lower point.
Yeah. So an example of that is like if you get a $3,000 raise next year and you've been living somewhat comfortably, like you're not miserable, put that extra $3,000 into upping the amount that you're putting towards your 401k. Yeah. If you always thought I can't get to 22.5, but I'm at 10 and I feel, you know, that's all I can do now. Well, now you can do another 3,000 because that's new money that you were not used to living on. And it's a great way to kind of pay yourself first and not let the money, you know, fall away into other things that you might not even realize.
Yeah. Great point. All right. That's it, Maggie.
Mike, that's not it. This was a IRS fun fact sandwich. I've got
ooh,
more.
Ooh, okay.
I'm just kidding. Oh, you look genuinely excited. I don't really have more, But I did have you look like I was doing that as a joke, but then you seem so excited.
I was excited.
Okay. I did have a couple that I didn't go through earlier, so I could pull a couple out.
Bottom of the barrel IRS fun facts.
Okay, bottom of the barrel. The word tax.
Yeah.
Do you know where it comes from?
Some Latin word.
What? That's a solid guess. It does come from some Latin word, like many words.
Okay.
It comes from the Latin word taxo, which by the way sounds like made up, but it does. Which means I estimate. It's kind of cool.
Interesting. Yeah.
And then here's my last fun fact. This is actually kind of a cool fact. So a ton of people work for the IRS. I think like over 100,000 people work for the IRS. 2/3 of IRS employees would recommend working to the IRS to a friend. Apparently, it's like a pretty good place to work. So public opinion of the IRS overall in terms of like all government agencies is really low. But I think that's a matter of people just don't love the idea of paying taxes. But it's a every time we're like, you know, driving on a road or my kids go to school, public schools, you know, it reminds you just why we pay taxes and even just, you know, war and protecting our country and all these other things. But what's interesting is that public opinion is so low, but actually people really enjoy working for the IRS.
I bet I would like working for the IRS. Structure, process. I think you would. I think it would be good for me.
And so they have a number of job different type, like a very wide range of jobs, just like many companies, right? From like data transcribers who can make, you know, I think this is old data because these are like hourly rates. It's $12 to $14 an hour. That sounds a little low now. To IRS officers and agents. There's actually like, I can't remember what show I've seen this in, but there's like actual agents that like go to people's house and like bust in and take documents and stuff. You know, they're like detectives.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a variety of jobs.
Did you know that the National Park Service also has an investigative unit?
What are they investigating? Like
crimes,
like fishing, poaching fish and stuff?
There was like a series on TV about that.
Yeah.
There was a murder. So like
the guy who tried to do it in the jurisdiction. Yeah.
Yeah. So like he killed his wife in a national park and there is like, and it's only like a 3-person team that cover the entire country. But if a crime happens in a national park, it is up to this unit to go investigate it because of its unique what's the word when
jurisdictions
because of the unique jurisdictions of it.
That is fascinating.
Anyway,
well,
we're getting off
to
topic.
Bring this back around, the IRS pays more than the national average, and it's like the job satisfaction is like higher than average. So if anyone's looking for a job, you know, might be an interesting place, and you get great benefits working for the government from what I hear. So I think we can wrap this up and hit our top three takeaways, which don't have anything to do with working for the IRS.
Yep. All right. Number one, understanding pre-tax and post-tax savings plans is an important part of achieving your financial goals.
Number two, always strive to max out what the IRS allows. Like we said in the very beginning, this is following the law and this is taking advantage of rights that are afforded to you. So it's a good thing and you should be doing it.
And number three, if you have aggressive financial goals, you're going to need aggressive savings habits, and you can start by maxing out these programs.
Yeah, that's a great point on aggressive goals because, you know, if you are striving for something like early retirement, it's done through things like maxing this out. And it'd be pretty hard to do without this, quite honestly, unless you just make loads and loads of money and just hoard it away.
Well, thanks everybody for listening. If you've been challenged or inspired by what you've heard, please rate and review the show. You can also subscribe to make sure you never miss an episode.
If you have any thoughts or questions, we would love to hear from you, and you can leave us a voicemail or text us at 404-981-3370 or hit us up on Instagram. You probably shouldn't send us your tax questions, even though that is how Mike and I first met, is me asking him for some tax advice.
Yeah.
But we're not tax advisors, so, you know, go to Google for that.
That's
or your
right.
accountant.
All right. Thanks, Maggie.
Thanks, Mike. Bye.
Bye.